Well, good evening. This Christmas Eve, I want to ask you all a question. And it's probably not the kind of question you normally get asked on Christmas Eve. Have you done all your shopping? Where are you spending the day tomorrow? How long have you got off work? This isn't one of those standard Christmas Eve questions. And it's probably not the kind of question you expected to get asked when you came to church either. This is my question. Who are you kissing this Christmas? Now, you might think that's a pretty left-field question, but I suspect you won't think I'm completely strange if you're familiar with a very popular Christmas song along these lines. I'm talking, of course, about the song, I Saw Mummy Kissing Santa Claus. You'll be relieved to know I'm not going to sing it for you, but let me remind you of the lyrics. I saw Mummy kissing Santa Claus underneath the mistletoe last night. She didn't see me creep down the stairs to have a peep. She thought that I was tucked up in my bedroom, fast asleep. Then I saw Mummy tickle Santa Claus underneath his beard, so snowy white. Oh, what a laugh it would have been if Daddy had only seen Mummy kissing Santa Claus last night. It's actually a very clever and a very fun song. Told from the child's perspective, we find this particular kid too excited to sleep, ducking downstairs, as kids often do, to see what they're missing out on. Perhaps this child even hoped to see Santa. But then, unbeknown to the child's parents, the child catches them in a very tender moment. Now, of course, it's a wonderful thought that this particular daddy might have gone to all the trouble of getting dressed up in a Santa suit, presumably for no other reason than the amusement of he and his wife. But it's an even more lovely thought that the child in question would draw the conclusion that they now know something no one else knows, when in reality it's the smooching couple under the mistletoe who know much more than their child. It's a very clever song. And it's a well-loved song because it's a picture of a very happy family at Christmas. It's a home marked by innocence, by warmth, and perhaps by a little adventure. It's a very attractive picture, and I, for one, am very drawn to it. It makes me want to go home and kiss my wife. What about you? Who does it make you want to go home and kiss? Who will you be kissing this Christmas? I saw a couple of wives shaking their heads in their husband's direction there for a second. Perhaps it will be your wife or your husband, even if he doesn't go to the trouble of getting dressed up in a Santa suit. Perhaps it'll be your mum or your dad. Perhaps it'll be your kids. Perhaps your boyfriend or girlfriend. Maybe your close friends. Perhaps you're even here tonight and you feel deeply sad because you don't think there's anyone for you to kiss this Christmas. And that is a sad reality for many at Christmas time. Tonight I want to follow up my strange question with a suggestion. The person I want to suggest is someone who anyone can kiss, even if there's no one else. And the person I'm suggesting is someone everyone should kiss this Christmas. This is my suggestion. Kiss the Son of God. Kiss Jesus. Let me explain to you what I mean. To understand what I'm talking about tonight, you need to understand Psalm 2. It's the reading from the Bible that we had just a few minutes ago. And this psalm was written about 1,000 years before the first Christmas. And it was written by David, the great king of Israel. And he wrote it because he was wrestling with a question in his head. He was wondering why so many of the world's other kings were opposed to God and opposed to him. Listen again to the first three verses of the psalm. They're there on your sheet. Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters. God's anointed one was an Old Testament way of referring to God's king. At coronations in those days, they would often pour oil on the head of the new king as a sign of God's blessing. And it's in that sense that the king was anointed. And it's from the phrase anointed one that we get the word Messiah or Christ. Christ is the New Testament word for the same title, the anointed one, God's king. And here at the beginning of this psalm, David wonders why the earth's rulers take a stand against the Lord, against God, and against his anointed one, his king. Because in David's mind, opposing God is a crazy thing to do. And he explains why in verses 4 to 6. See, there he says, the one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath, saying, I have installed my king on Zion, my holy hill. You notice there in verse 4 the way he refers to God as the one enthroned in heaven. It's a very clear reminder that whilst there may be kings on the earth who think they run the joint, there's actually a king in heaven, and he's the one who's really in charge. And that's why God laughs when the rulers of the earth oppose him. This isn't meant to be a picture of a harsh or callous God. This is an eye-catching picture of a very powerful God. You see, it's ridiculous that anyone on earth would even dream of taking on God, no matter how powerful they are. This would be something like Tonga declaring war on the US, or the Poms thinking they could go home with the ashes. Sorry, I couldn't resist. It's that kind of mismatch that we're talking about when people oppose God. God laughs at these kings because their opposition to him is laughable. But you'll notice the psalm doesn't just tell us that God laughs, it also tells us that God gets angry. Verse 5 says that he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath. But you notice how he terrifies them, verse 6, by installing his king, by crowning his anointed one, his Christ. Now, at first glance, that doesn't seem like a very angry or terrifying thing at all. But when we understand what this king will do, we start to grasp how terrifying it really is. Because God's Christ, God's king, will bring God's wrath, his anger. He is the one who will dispense God's justice against the rebellious kings of the earth. It'll be God's king who will crush the rebellion against God. And that's what verses 7 to 9 are about. King David explains how God's king is also known as God's son. And as God's son, the anointed one is entrusted with God's inheritance. One day, all the nations of the earth will belong to him. And he will rule over them, bringing God's crushing victory over all his enemies. And it's for all these reasons that the psalm finishes with a warning, especially for the kings of the earth. Look there again at verse 10. It says, therefore, you kings, be wise. Be warned, you rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest he be angry and you be destroyed in your way, for his wrath can flare up in a moment. It's really a pretty straightforward message. If God is really in charge, and if he really is going to terrify his opponents in the end, his anointed one really is going to pour out his anger, if those things are true, then there's only one wise response. Submit to him. If God is king, then you should allow him to rule you. And the way to do that, he says, is to serve him, verse 11, and to kiss his son, verse 12. In ancient times, it was common to kiss a superior's hand as a sign of respect or submission, and perhaps that's what the psalm's referring to. But whatever King David had in mind when he wrote this, there's no doubt that he's urging people to embrace God's king, God's son. And to make that point, he uses this language of a kiss. And that's what smart rulers will do. They will recognise that even they are subject to rule. Smart kings will recognise that there is a king over even them. And they will embrace this king. They will kiss him. They will submit to him. They will let him rule them. And they will do that knowing that the alternative really is terrifying, facing the wrath of an all-powerful God. Now, when King David wrote this psalm about 3,000 years ago, he couldn't have known how prophetic his words would prove to be. But we can see it, of course. I mean, living as we do 3,000 years later, we're able to see that what this psalm teaches us about one of David's descendants, Jesus. And the New Testament makes it very clear to us that we can't actually understand this psalm unless we recognise who Jesus is. He is God's Son. He is the ultimate anointed one, the Christ. He is God's King. And even more than King David, the words of this psalm apply to him. And that's why this is a great psalm to be thinking about and reading at Christmas. Jesus is the one God has crowned as ultimate ruler. Jesus is the one who will one day bring God's verdict on all people. We will be accountable to him. He is the one who will ultimately bring God's crushing victory against his enemies. Now, even so, there are plenty of people in the world who continue to oppose Jesus. Even in his own day, the rulers of the time took a stand against him to the extent that they even killed him. And Jesus' disciples at the time saw that as a direct fulfillment of the psalm. The crucifixion of Jesus was the ultimate expression of kings and rulers gathering together against the Lord and against his anointed one. But of course, because all opposition to God is laughable, Jesus wasn't beaten, not even by death. He rose again. And he ascended to heaven. And that's why the words of this psalm are still terrifyingly true. Because the Bible makes it clear that the baby Jesus did grow up. And he died, and he rose and ascended to heaven. And one day he will return as God's King. And all who stand against God will be terrified by the wrath that Jesus will bring. And that, of course, makes the way we treat Jesus the critical issue in life. And that's why I'm asking you tonight who you'll be kissing this Christmas. And that's why I'm suggesting to you that no matter who else you kiss this Christmas, you mustn't fail to kiss Jesus, the babe in the manger, who is God's eternal King. And I don't mean just a polite hello kiss for Jesus. You know, nice to see you again, Jesus. It's great having you around at this time of year, Jesus. It's not what I'm talking about. When I urge you to kiss Jesus, I'm meaning what the psalm means. I'm urging you to embrace him, to give your life to serving him. I'm urging you to let him rule you. See, when Jesus does return to bring God's verdict to the world, God's enemies won't just be the people who hammered the nails into Jesus' hands. His enemies won't just be the terrorists and murderers of the world. God's enemies will be anyone who hasn't embraced his Son. Anyone who's refused to let him rule them. Anyone who's kept Jesus at arm's length. And there are hundreds of ways people do that. Even people who would consider themselves fine, upstanding citizens. Some people do keep Jesus at arm's length by committing murders and doing other such evil things. Some people do keep Jesus at arm's length by saying they just don't believe in God. But other people keep Jesus at arm's length through a religious veneer and a good dose of charity. People keep Jesus at arm's length by blaming God for all the suffering in the world. Some people keep Jesus at arm's length by presuming that, you know, all roads ultimately lead to heaven in the end. Lots of people keep Jesus at arm's length simply by being busy and working hard and devoting themselves to their families. And if all you knew about Jesus is that he was a cute and cuddly baby in a manger 2,000 years ago, then it's easy to see how you could make that mistake, because babies don't get angry at you. Babies don't pour out the anger of God upon you. But that's why I want you to read this psalm tonight and confront this question, because you need to know that Jesus grew up. You need to know that Jesus is alive. And you need to know that everything Psalm 2 says about him is true. The strange question I'm asking you tonight is actually the biggest question you'll be asked this Christmas. And so I want to plead with you tonight to take just a few minutes to stop this Christmas Eve. To stop giving your opinions, to stop being distracted, to stop trusting in your well-polished life, and to listen to what God says. To listen to the question he wants to ask you. Are you kissing Jesus? Have you embraced him? Are you letting him rule you? Because if you're not, then you are in very real danger. Now I can hear you saying, hang on a minute, this isn't a very cheery Christmas sermon. Wasn't the birth of Jesus a cause for great joy? Didn't his arrival signal God's gift of peace and salvation entering the world, his rescue? And of course the answer is yes, absolutely. But the rescue he brings is rescue from something. And that's why the very last sentence of Psalm 2 is so important. Look at what it says. Blessed are all who take refuge in him. What we find here is a deep and almost paradoxical truth. There is no refuge from him except that which is in him. There is no safety from the Son's anger except by being safe in him. There is no protection from his wrath unless he himself protects you. And that, of course, is what the death and the resurrection of Jesus were all about. And that's why Christmas is a time for great rejoicing. Because Christmas isn't about the arrival of a cute baby, but the arrival of a refuge, a safe place, a sure and certain refuge from the anger of God that this baby himself will one day bring. This is an incredible truth, that those who embrace the Son end up finding eternal safety in his embrace. Now, of course, many of you here tonight know the joy that brings in a deeply personal way. And I hope you will know that joy freshly this Christmas. That it won't wash over you, but that you'll remember again what a breathtaking privilege it is to kiss the Son. To embrace Jesus, to let him rule you, to find refuge in him. And if you're here tonight but you know you've really been keeping Jesus at arm's length, then let me urge you this Christmas not simply to be aware of Jesus or even to admire Jesus, but to recognise you need Jesus desperately. You need the refuge that he alone can provide. You need him so much that you should embrace him as king. You should serve him. You should let him rule you. You should be kissing him this Christmas and all the days of your life. God says, kiss the Son, lest he be angry. Blessed are all who take refuge in him.